Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm very happy to be here, and I'm happy to work with the material we're going to be working with. It's gorgeous material, this Dogen fascicle called One Bright Jewel, commonly called One Bright Pearl. But before we get into that, I'll just say I'm giving 5 lectures on this fascicle for the intensive, which started today. And the next two Sundays, the next two Sundays I'll also be speaking about this fascicle. So it's kind of a series, although any one lecture is fine to hear. So I'd first like to say, what is a practice period and what is an intensive? Practice periods have happened since the beginning of Buddhism, mostly because in India, when Buddha started, there was what they call the rainy season. So they couldn't be out. And so all the monks would gather during the rainy season twice a year for 100 days of being together. And Buddha would give talks, and they'd work as a community. And then the rest of the time, they would be wandering either in the forest or mendicants, they called them, wandering, begging for their food. So we have a long history of gathering to practice together. And over the course of the last 20 years, Clouds and Water has developed a kind of a practice period that anybody can do. You can do it in your bed. So there's no reason not to do it. It's very broad. So you can do it very broadly. And there's a pamphlet about it. It's starting today, so you can get in there if you haven't decided to do so yet. It can be done completely at home, if that's the case. It can be done with a mix of being here and home, and it can be done largely contributing here. And it's a shorter one. It's only 5 weeks long. And then what we've done is we're doing an intensive, which is a kind of retreat that Clouds and Water and myself have developed, so that we can have a little more intense communal practice, even though we're going to work, have families, all this stuff that happens in a city center person's life. So for the next 2 weeks, we had a really nice turnout. 17 people, or 18 people if you include me, are going to be sitting Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 8 in the morning, Saturdays from 9 to noon, and doing the Sunday morning from 6 to 10:30. And we're going to do that for 2 weeks. And every time we've done an intensive, people have reported that it's really, really wonderful. Deep to practice with other people and helping to learn how to intensify your practice but not leave your life, right? Not go to the monastery or have a really, really intense retreat. So that's what's happening. One of the things I wanted to say about it is, for me, now I've been in Buddhism over 40 years, in many sanghas and in different capacities, the most important thing in my spiritual life now is the day. One day at a time, just for today. How I open the day needs to be spiritual, and how I close the day needs to be spiritual. And that's one of the emphasis we have in practice period, that you open and close the day. It could be as simple as a 4-line verse that we provide. But lately, I've been doing, I changed my bedroom. I'm calling it a boudoir. And I took all my clothes off the comfy chair and put it on on a bench that I got from my husband's workshop. I brought up all my candles, so every window has a candle. I have a candelabra, which I hadn't used for years, that I'm now using. And in the night, I'm going up a little bit early. I'm turning on all the candles. I'm sitting in my comfy chair. I even got a teapot, electric teapot, so I can make tea for myself. And I use the Insight timer. And I sit. And it's been a really beautiful way to close my day. Because I can get quite quiet at the end of the day. At the beginning of the day, I'm just filled with everything I have to do today, the morning sitting. But the nighttime sitting is very, very quiet in my life. And I get to review a little bit what I did during the day. Some of it good, some of it I wish not. The good part I can bring in to the love that I'm fostering. And the bad part I can let go of. Ah, I'm a human. Please be compassionate towards my own limitations. And then I can go to bed. So the practice period is very focused on that kind of an opening and closing of the day. Okay, so let's begin to talk about one bright jewel. So there are eight translations, and only Okamura Roshi calls it one bright jewel. All the other six or seven translations call it one bright pearl. Pearl? You know, white, round, beautiful. So why did he choose to change the word? This is a big change, really. And it's very interesting why he chose to change the word. One thing is a pearl is white. And you can't see through a pearl. It has its own substance color. So when you put a pearl on my ocasa, you see a white pearl on a brown robe. But what he wanted to suggest is that this great jewel of the world, of spirituality, of Buddhism, is actually transparent. It doesn't have its own color. It blends or unifies with anything you put on it. So if you took this transparent jewel and you put it on my brown ocasa, it would turn brown. But then if I put it up with that flower, it would turn yellow. And if I took it down and put it over with the purple, it would turn purple. This is a big change, that the jewel that we're talking about merges or is unified with whatever condition comes up. It's not separate. So that in itself is a good reason to change from a pearl to a transparent jewel. And the second reason I know really well, I'm really attached to pearls. Not only because I'm a woman and we're supposed to wear a what do they call it, a simple black dress with a pair of pearls, right? If you grew up in your age, they don't say that, right? My mother was big on pearls, and she made sure I had a strand of pearls by the time I was 18. Okay. And I noticed when I wanted to change from one bright jewel to one bright pearl to one bright jewel, I didn't want to give up the pearl. I'm attached to the beauty of a pearl. I'm also attached to jewels, but not quite as much, right? Because they're not as specific as a pearl. So I decided that I agreed with Okamura Roshi that we should change the word. There's one exception, which I'll talk about a little later. So what is one bright jewel? The last reason to change it to jewel is there's a whole history in Buddhism through many sutras of it being a jewel, the mani jewel. And we have one in the Zen, in here. Jay, would you just point to the mani jewel on the Jizo statue? It's in his hand. Yeah, it's a round jewel in his hand. And usually it's translated the wish-fulfilling jewel. And this mani jewel is all through Buddhist history. So if you call this Dogen fascicle a pearl, you lose all the historic reference of what is a mani jewel. So that's the main reason he changed it. And he talked a lot about all the different references of a jewel in the scriptures. So the Lankavatara Sutra, Complete Enlightenment Sutra, and the Sharingama Sutra are definitely, they talk about the mani jewel. It's also in Pali and in the Nikayas. It's in Indian mythology. So Indra's net is this whole, the network of interdependence. And where, like a fishing net, and where the cords cross over at the intersection of the cords is a jewel, is a person too. We're all the jewel at the intersection. And because we're all linked up, this is interdependence, because we're all linked up, when someone moves that way, I kind of move that way. And when someone sits down, the cords pull me down and up. So all of our actions are reflected in the whole internet, a different kind of an internet. Although it's kind of true in that internet. It's funny how everything humans make still have the same properties of in and out and the tides of the ocean, etc. So each person in Indra's net is a jewel. Each moment in life is a jewel in the interconnected space. It's the symbol of complete enlightenment. There's many, many metaphors. So what I want to talk about is, and it goes back to my boudoir. Where do you find your refuge? You find your refuge in the jewel of enlightenment, or the jewel of refuge. But refuge is a very deep thing. I can't take refuge in things of the world that come and go. Why? Because they come and go. So I can't take refuge in my marriage. I can a little bit, but he's going to die, or I'm going to die, Or some of you have gotten divorced. So marriages come and go. Children definitely come and go. I'm in the go part. Sanghas come and go. If you've been in long enough, some of you know what it's like to lose a sangha. Very traumatic. So you can't take refuge in the come and the go, because it's not permanent. Well, nothing's permanent. But our understanding of the jewel can take us everywhere, through everything, until the very last moment when you die. If you understand the jewel deep enough, then it can be your refuge. So, the first one is this one. Okay. So you can't take refuge in the surface of your life, because everything, including your life, comes and goes. And again, this is such an essential teaching. I teach it over and over, but also there are new people here. And to tell you the truth, I can't hear it enough, because I am attached to pleasure, gain, success, and praise. Yes. That makes me happy. But unfortunately, that's not the way of the world, right? You're not always on the positive side of the slate. This is what they call the eight worldly winds, and I have a little gesture. Ready? So if you're really aware of what's going on in your life, you're aware of the worldly winds. Sometimes it's great and pleasurable. Sometimes life is painful. Sometimes I gain things, like having two beautiful boys that I raised up, and then you lose them. Now one's in LA and one's in NYC. All day long, I can look at gain and loss. And I'll tell you, at the end of your life, I'm starting to get old enough to see the end. Right? The end is all about loss. It's not about gain. You lose your friends, you lose your house, you lose your eyesight, you lose your ability to walk. It's all about loss. So if we don't have a jewel that's deep enough, if we don't have a refuge that's deep enough, it's not going to make it to death as our refuge, right? Because it's clinging to all the parts of life we want. Success and failure, that's just another version. And praise and criticism. And again, this one I can look at myself all day long. I love being praised, and I get hurt when I'm criticized. And then I've got to go to my boudoir and do all these forgiveness. I mean, I have a whole list of things I have to do after I'm criticized to restore myself to equanimity. But nevertheless, I have this kind of world view that I realize I have to let go of it. If I want to practice being a loving person, a non-self-centered person, a person who's used by the world for the benefit of all, I have to learn how to let this go. and not be stuck on praise, gain, success, and so forth. So your money jewel, your wish-fulfilling jewel, it's not wishing for pleasure, gain, success, and praise. It's wishing for equanimity that can receive the whole of life, everything I can receive, and I can receive it as a miracle. I just wrote the monthly mindfulness thing. You'll get it in your email. And Albert Einstein said, I don't have it exactly, but he said, there's two ways of living. One is that everything is ordinary, and the other is everything is a miracle. So this fascicle of one bright jewel is in the camp of everything is a miracle. Everything. If that's your mani jewel, you can get through everything. Grief is one bright jewel. Anger is one bright jewel. The politicians you don't like are one bright jewel. The this, the that, illness. Any condition is an expression, if you're deep enough, of the miracle of life. It's only not the miracle if I'm running it through my desire systems, right? I don't like that person, so that person is not a miracle. I don't like being sick, so I'm going to do whatever I can to deny that sickness is a part of life. What's, you know, we could have a million. I just got fired from my job, therefore that company is not the one bright jewel. And let me tell you, besides. So this way of thinking about spirituality is asking you to dig very deeply into what is actually going on here. And no matter what, even if you're in a war, the miracle of life is still going on. There's a movie, I don't necessarily recommend it because it's very violent, and I raised two boys, so I've seen everything, you know. But it's called The Red Line. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting movie because of the camera work. They're in this terrible situation where everyone's going to die, right? I won't go through the whole thing, but the camera work is you'd look this way. A person had been shot lying on the ground. They'd look this way and see a dead, bloody person over here. They change their head and they see a dandelion in full bloom. The other way. And it was all through the movie, this back and forth. It was very powerful for me, anti-war movie, but it was all about that the mystery was still present even in this terrible, I mean, the worst human situation you could be in, a massacre. There's still the trees, the sound of the trees, the blossoming of nature, the birds. That's depth. So the practice period mindfulness task is to accept all conditions as one bright jewel. Accept all condition as the intersection of the network of the world. So, in order to go deep, sometimes I talk about it, although I don't necessarily think deep is down, but still, for me, it's like, I always have to decide if I'm going to swear in public.
Do it.
Yeah. So, when the shit hits the fan, and all of those things are present, the parts we don't want. Part of spiritual life is digging in the shit. And that, to me, is... So when I don't like what's happening in my life, I say to myself, I have got to get deeper than this. This is an opportunity for me to go really, really deep. And here's the shovel. And shovel down until you can see this moment as one bright jewel. And that's, for me, enlightenment. That you can see the universal perspective, that's what Katagiri Roshi would call it. You can see the huge internet of things, even though your situation or your country's situation or whatever it is not good, is on that side. Right? This is spiritual stability, Katagiri Roshi called it, where you're not tossed around by the stories in your life. You're not tossed around. You have a anchor in emptiness. That's your name, right? Akyoku? Yeah. Not anchor, root? What's your translation of your name?
Dwelling in emptiness.
Dwelling in emptiness. That's the way you can get through anything, including your own death or the death of a loved one or getting a diagnosis of cancer or losing the job you've had for 30 years to a pipsqueak 23-year-old or whatever is happening, right? We all have stories, don't we? That's our deal, as our karma is just filled with stories. But what Buddhism is asking you to do is take care of your stories from the perspective of unconstructed reality. All right, let's go to the next one. So most of us, when we come to Buddhism, do not know about or have a personal connection with what I like to call unconstructed reality. Emptiness is too nihilistic for me. Sometimes people call it unbounded openness. That's a little better. But still, I can get attached to unbounded openness. Like unbounded love. I like that. I always love love. So I avoid it by saying unconstructed reality, which sounds like a philosophy class, and I don't get too attached to it. But it's very, very important that we sit enough to have a taste of silence. We sit enough to go beyond our stories. We sit enough that we train our minds to be gentle and quiet and somewhat calm, right? And then we can dip into there whenever we lose ourself in the winds. We just dip back into unconstructed reality, calm down, take a refuge, and then come back. And the, why I always forget this, the base of operation in your mind changes. The base of operation in your mind changes. It changes from greed, anger, and ignorance, from only wanting the good stuff and not wanting the bad stuff, to seeing life, all of life, every condition as one bright jewel. And if I see every condition as one bright jewel, I take care of it the best I can. successfully and failing. But I try to take care of the moments, the phenomena, the people, the stories of my life. But my practice is on a daily basis to take care of it from the view of no centralized self, from the view of unconstructed reality. So we chant at Zen Temple the Heart Sutra every morning. And we really should teach more about the Heart Sutra because it can be misleading, I think. But also it's very important. It's a reminder of unconstructed reality. And this is the last sentence, gate gate, paragate, parasomgate, bodhisva. And my Tibetan teacher, Dan Brown, gave me this translation, which I totally love. I'm attached to this translation. So, beyond thought, which means through the practice of Zazen. I just want to see how far I'm going to get. Okay, I think we're okay. Through the practice of Zazen, through the practice of meditation and mindfulness, through the practice of concentration, I am teaching my mind how to stay one-pointed, how to stay with the object at hand. And when that happens, this total fantasy life calms down. That's what we call beyond thought. Do you know what I mean by total fantasy life? The past and the present, it's a fantasy, right? Memory, you can't trust your memory. When I talk to my brothers, I feel like, were we raised in the same house? And the answer is yes. But our memories of the house are totally different. And how many times, including this intensive, although I'm really working on it, not being afraid, how many times have I projected something in the future and it doesn't happen? Almost always. And if it does happen, it's not how I thought it was going to happen. It's a variation of it. So this whole, what do we call it, monkey mind, it's a waste of your precious life to just be in there, going round and round and round. So beyond thought. Beyond personal identity, this is the one that says you are more than your stories. You are a Buddha. You are a jewel in this net. You're much, much more than Judith Wisner-Geer was born to these parents. She lived this way. She's a Jew. That puts her here, over here. Then she met him, right? You are much, much larger than these stories that we identify as self. And these practices in Buddhism are to help you see that you are bigger than your stories. It includes our stories, but we're bigger than our stories. I'm not throwing my story out. I love my children, and they're part of my story. I don't understand them. Especially, they're not living with me now. I have no idea what their life is like. But I still love them, and I am going to do everything I can to help them from afar, right? I pressed this. Is it? Oh, it's still going. Okay. It's not that we eradicate or kill our personal stories. It's we see them from a different place in our mind. We understand there is a karmic self here, but also we have a self that's way, way, way bigger than our stories. Beyond constructions of time, if I can say anything for my own development as a Zen person This was the biggest enlightenment I had, that the only reality is right now. And I worked on that for 40 years, and I didn't quite get it until, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. And it just opened my eyes how much I construct stories around time, the future and the past. And now I really practice not doing that. And it's a great, great freedom. Bodhi. Awakened awareness gone beyond individual consciousness. What I want to talk about is awakened awareness. You awaken when you're not in time and you're not centralizing around yourself, but you're awake to what's happening right now. That's awakened awareness. You use yourself and the conditions to make a better world. It's very, very active. Some people think Zen is passive. It is not passive. Even resting in unconstructed reality, which I'm going to talk about with the intensive people, even that, even using the word resting, it's still not passive. Because my default is greed, anger, and ignorance. My default is the momentum of life. If I didn't wake up and do something spiritual, I would just be on automatic, wouldn't you? Like, what are my chores, and what's going to make me happy, and what's going to make them happy, and the Energizer Bunny, plug her in, you know, make dinner. That default mechanism has to be interrupted if you're a spiritual person. You have to be in awakened awareness. And then Svaha, I thought that was cute. Ooh, ah, wow, is what he put at the end. Like, if you're really living that way, it's a wow. It's a wow. Let's go to the next. I'm just kind of running through things that help us understand unconstructed reality. How do you open up? You don't kill your karmic life. You don't throw away your stories. But you open your stories up so that they include the miracle, one bright jewel. This is Thich Nhat Hanh teaching. I mean, it's a teaching. All Buddhists teach it. I get it from Thich Nhat Hanh. The eight concepts, that's very important. That word concepts, what does that mean? Construction. So this is constructed reality through our thoughts. This is unconstructed reality that is not producing a concept. So, yes, life and death. I get that. I'm grieving someone who died last Saturday. Yeah, she died. She's not coming back. You know, but it also she didn't die, because she lives really strongly in me, and she's becoming the universe, so that's not dying. You know, it's an idea I have of life and death. That's what we call concept, the idea of permanence and dissolution. The idea of coming and going. Have my children left? Absolutely not. I am totally involved with my kids. In this moment, even. And the one and the many. These are all the duality. And through our thinking mind, we create duality. If we stay with duality, we will never be happy. We will always wish for what we don't have. That's gain, right? The eight no's are an expression of unconstructed reality. And basically, they're the eight concepts with a no put in front. No birth, no death, no permanence, no dissolution, no coming, no going, no one, no many. Sometimes I can really feel this if I am completely in the present moment. And in the present moment, the concepts disappear into the unification of what you're doing in the present moment. Katagiri Roshi used to call that subject and object merged. Sometimes, I'm going to say this, but please don't attach to it. That's one of our precepts, right? Don't attach to anything, even the truth. Sometimes when you're sitting zazen, I would say usually it's after you've practiced a lot or you're in an intensive or you're at a retreat. Sometimes the mind relaxes. And it stops. And it stops. I like this. I don't like this. I like this. I don't like this. Get that. Don't get that. You know. Sometimes it stops. This is called cessation. Sometimes your mind, not because you told it to, not because you willed it to stop, it just relaxes. And you start to feel the unconstructed nature of life, that it's not through thought or concept that life exists. Okay, let's see. I want to see what's next. Do I have something next? Oh, okay. Let's just wait 1 second for that. So, in the very beginning of One Bright Jewel, in the beginning of the fascicle, there's an image of someone fishing, loves to fish, a layperson fishing. And he throws his fishing hook out of the boat and in and out and maybe catches some fish. And all of a sudden, a golden fish, a large golden fish, flies out of the air and comes into his rowboat. He didn't even try. He didn't even hook. They talk a lot. This is a fish that was not hooked. This was a fish that was not sought after. It was just a golden fish leaped in the air, a flying fish. Flying fish leaped in the air and landed in your rowboat. This is the image of effortlessness in practice. It's not that there's no effort. So effort and effortlessness, they have to work together. All the dualities have to work together. But you cannot force spirituality. You can't force peace. You can't force forgiveness. You can't force enlightenment. I have tried for decades to force enlightenment. And that's not how it came. It came, a golden fish flew into my body, or landed in my boudoir. It didn't come from my striving for it. However, this fisherman was in the boat. He was available for the golden fish. So we practice, like some of you are in the intensive. That's effort. That's proper effort. You just do your practice. And eventually, the golden fish lands in your lap. In this lifetime or another lifetime, Katagiri Roshi would add. You don't know when, but you just do the practices. You just keep doing them. You keep doing them. And the golden fish, without using a hook, lands in your lap. And from the Fukan Zazengi, they also say, this is one of Dogen's teaching, The treasure store will open of itself, and you will use it at will. That's the last line of the Fukan Sasenge. And the other thing is, revere the person who has gone beyond learning, beyond thought, beyond striving for enlightenment, and is free from effort. Free from effort for me is, I can see the one bright jewel in the conditions of the moment, so I don't have to strive. This one, this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment, they're all it. Okay, let's finish with one more thing. Yeah, I'm almost there. So this is a different kind of mind, the mind we're talking about, that can see everything is the jewel itself. Transparent jewel. Every condition is it. Every moment is it. So Ru Jin, who's Dogen's teacher, I always think we should be bowing down to Ru Jin, not Dogen, when we bow. Because, you know, the teachers are the real special people. But anyway, Ru Jin said, enlightenment is having a flexible mind. This is a mind that can move from object to object to object to object, can move from thought to thought to thought, from emotion to emotion to emotion to emotion, from what's happening now, talking, bowing, lighting the incense, then talking out there, then coming back in, doing the precept ceremony, then leaving, then driving in my car home, then making, going into the kitchen. And do you see what I'm saying? Every condition my mind receives as one bright jewel. And it doesn't get stuck on any of my, I like it, I don't like it, this is good, that's bad, this, if I make a good dinner, that's better than making a bad dinner. It doesn't get stuck in evaluation like that. It just says every moment is the bright jewel. And Dan Brown, my Tibetan teacher, added a serviceable mind. I love that. It's a mind that is not self-centered. So it can serve the moment or the conditions that are arising. That's all. Oh, dishes. Oh, now I get to take care of myself, a hot bath. Oh, you know, it just, everything. It receives and it notices what needs to happen in that moment, a serviceable mind. And the image, I won't talk about that, we're almost done. The only place in the sutra that I prefer the idea of a pearl, the jewel, for this image, the jewel has to be round. So there's a little failure there. If you put a marble, let's talk a marble, in a bowl, I almost brought a marble to put in one of our round bowls, and you go start to go like this, these are all the winds moving the bowl, or pain, pleasure, success, failure, life moving the bowl, what happens to the marble? It just finds a path. It just goes around and around. Sometimes it's near the rim, sometimes it's deep, sometimes it's going like that. That is Dogen's image of a flexible mind, a pearl in a bowl. I think it's time.
The closing chant is on the front of your bulletin. May our intention equally penetrate